You're listening to Face Off, episode 32, recorded August 23rd, 2009. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn.
And in this podcast, we like to talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can view our show notes by going to faceoffshow.com, and you can follow us by going to twitter.com/faceoffshow.
All right. Well, do we got any news this week? No. Anything happening?
No news and follow-ups. Well, there I do have an update to my Xbox 360 dilemma.
Okay.
It turns out that the error I got actually falls under the Red Ring of Death 3-year extended warranty.
Oh, so that's good. So you just send it in?
And yeah, it's got to send it in and get fixed. But it's still ridiculous that they had to extend a warranty 3 years because
it's Do they give you a shipping label to send it back, or do you got to pay for that?
No, it's a shipping label, but I still have to pay for like the box and stuff to ship it in. Because like they even suggested, like, don't send it in your original Xbox box because we throw it away. So who knows? Huh.
Well, you might have a box laying around the house or something.
I'll try and find something, but I don't have to pay to get it fixed. I'm happy about that.
That's always a plus.
Yes. So let's get into our web apps. The first one we have is called Retweet. And Retweet is a social news sort of dig style thing done through Twitter.
Okay.
Through retweets.
Yeah, now, you know, I've seen these little, what do they call it, social little badges, buttons. Thingies, buttons.
Yep, I have too.
But I just thought it was just a button to put something on Twitter. I didn't know there's actually an app behind it.
Yeah. So from the app itself, you can go get news and links. It's just links. So it's not really news like dig or anything. It's just links. Whatever people are posting through Twitter. And so you can go through and you can retweet with one button. It'll send you to Twitter and stuff. It's okay. But this is where those buttons have come from. Yeah, I've noticed a lot of websites have implemented those in their RSS feeds as well.
Yeah, it's like, you know, we saw a trend where they're just putting in every button under the sun, and then I saw another trend where they're just removing all of them because it wasn't really helping. They were, you know, and now I'm kind of seeing the retweet ones showing up. So
yeah, so there's categories at the top. I have no idea where these categories are coming from. They make no sense because I click on gaming, and the top one to retweet in gaming is retweet this Bow Wow Greenlight mixtape cover dropping.
Okay.
What that has to do with video games is beyond
me. Or paid version of Twitter on the way.
Yeah.
So that has to do with gaming.
Gaming the system, man. Big Brother, right? Here's the ultimate game.
Xbox Slim Elite at Walmart.
Xbox Slim, where? Anyways, the new World of Warcraft update got announced at BlizzCon. I'm tired of hearing about it already. For the record, I don't
Wait, did you just say World of Warcraft?
Yes.
They have their own conference?
You don't know about BlizzCon?
They have their own conference.
Yeah, and it's huge.
Wow.
People freak out about it. I am very excited for Diablo 3 and StarCraft 2, for the record. I have no idea what this does with web technology. But yeah, forever. But I'm really pumped about StarCraft. I think it'll be a really good game. It's been a long time back in the day, but it's
been a ridiculously long time before.
It's still going strong in Korea.
Seriously?
I think so. South Korea was just gaga over StarCraft. It was like the most popular game over there. They, like, up until, like, as far as I know, 2 years ago, they had huge StarCraft tournaments, and like the people who won them were celebrities in that country.
Wow. Didn't somebody like die playing too much StarCraft over there?
Korean. He wouldn't pee. He poisoned himself with his own urine.
Really?
Yeah. Anyways. So check it out, retweet.com.
It's kind of like a dig interface, but it goes all through Twitter. And,
yeah.
Okay.
It's pretty. I don't know how useful it is, but if you want to see the cool stuff that's flowing through the Twitter sphere right now, it'd be a good way to do it.
Well, that's cool. Wish I thought of it.
I know, me too. So the next thing we're going to talk about is a web-based screencasting showdown.
So So the first contender, Screener.
Another one of those domain or web addresses. So Screener, the whole point of Screener is that it's really simple, really quick, easy to use, and then you can post your screen capture to Twitter. It will give you just a URL for it if you want to post it yourself or if you, you know. But you can, it signs in with Twitter with OAuth, which is kind of cool.
And I like that.
You go to record, and it just brings up a little Java applet, and it doesn't let you do full screen recording. It just has a little kind of dotted section where you pick the chunk of your screen that you want to record.
Huh.
Really simple. You
so
record.
So use Java then in the back end?
Yeah, I think all of these use Java.
So this is pretty cross-compatible then?
Yeah, yeah, it's yeah, exactly. Okay. So it'll go across all operating systems. If you can get Java to work, easy in Linux. But other than that, this is a really simple one. It's not super full featured. Oh, great, yeah. I don't have Java installed. But, you know, and you just record. It'll capture your microphone and then gives you a little screencast in like 2 seconds that you can post to Twitter. Cool. Really easy.
It looks nice, too. They have a great design.
Yeah, yeah. It's just simple colors, really nice. It fits sort of the quick, easy social network sites out there, you know, like TwitVid and stuff like that.
So we gave it a try and we recorded a little screencast. What was your rating or what did you like about it?
It did really good. It's nice that it picks a chunk of the screen. It gives you a nice countdown before you start recording, which is handy. It did a good job. It didn't look ridiculously great. There's a little bit of compression.
Okay, so when you're ready to start, you can kind of just move everything out of the way, get going, get your whatever you're going to present up on the screen, and get going.
Yeah,
cool.
Some of the things that bugged me about it, there was no like sort of post editing or anything like that. You know, it's like once you're done,
it's done.
You're done, and there's nothing you can do about it. But it's nice. It's just a simple URL that you can tweet out. You can't download the file or anything like that. It's just all web-based.
So this is kind of like the YouTube of screen capturing. It's like, you know, you wouldn't use this for a professional demo
exactly.
or something, but it's kind of like, hey, I got something to show everybody.
Like, let's say, yeah, you saw a friend on Twitter that was like, man, how do you do this? And you're just like, okay, pull up Screener, pull up your chunk and go, you know, click here, do this command. Okay.
Cool.
Post it on Twitter. Cool.
Easy enough.
Really easy to use. What's the next one?
The next one we have is Screen Toaster.
Right.
Now, I didn't know about Screener, but I had been using this one, and it's very similar. Basically, you just hit start recording. It uses, I think it's Flash to do the audio, maybe, and then Java like the other one, to capture the actual screen.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do audio and video, and it's, you know, it'll give you a link at the end. You can also convert it to MOVE, you know, the Apple QuickTime format, and you can do Flash as well, and it even has a link to automatically upload it to YouTube, so it must use like the YouTube API or something.
Yeah, that's really cool. You can download the .move file, which is an Apple QuickTime, and
so it's got a few more features.
To YouTube.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a few more features than the other one. I've used this with a friend online, an actual listener of the podcast, Cedric, and you know, he had shown me some Photoshop tutorials, and it was really helpful. And this came in handy because there's no setup time. You just go to the site, hit record, and you're recording your screen.
Yeah, that's what's nice about these web-based ones. Yeah, it does do full screen, which Screener does not. I mean, with Screener, you can drag the dotted line to be pretty much the whole screen, but Screen Toaster has just a full desktop option, which is really nice as well. Screener also will capture a webcam if you want to put it in there. I didn't have a webcam hooked up to my computer, so I couldn't test it.
Well, that like,
but I think it'll embed it inside your video.
Picture on the bottom or something?
Yeah.
That's nice.
Another thing is Screener has, you can view the recently screenered webcasts, but it just has sort of a stream.
So they're all public no matter what?
Yeah.
Okay. I think I'm pretty sure Screen Toaster is some semi-private.
Okay. Screen Toaster also, though, has like categories with featured videos. It seems a little bit more, if you really wanted to look through what people were screen toasting, you could check it out. Whereas Screener doesn't really have a whole browsing. It's just kind of like, here's the latest ones.
Okay.
I do like Screener's design more than Screen Toaster. Screen Toaster is a little busy. There's kind of a lot going on their website.
And then there, now when we recorded and tested this one, It didn't really give us enough time to move out all this other app.
I felt like I was kind of rushed. Like, you can see the screen toaster screen at the beginning of my video.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I just was kind of stupid, but I, like, with screener, I was like, okay, big countdown, 3, 2, 1. Okay. I gotta get my stuff out of the way and get ready. With screen toaster, I was kind of like, oh, it's recording. Okay.
So there's a possibility that you may have been able to move it out of the way, but the other one made it a little bit more obvious that it was time to move stuff out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And so it just seems like screen toaster is a little more advanced version of screener. It has a couple more features. Like you said, screener is sort of the YouTube. It's like quick and dirty, take it and throw it up, you know, version of this web app.
Okay. The next contender is Screen Jelly. I like the name.
Yeah. Cool. Screen Jelly, very simple. It's sort of the same thing. You first get there and it's like, okay, here's the big red record button to record your screen.
And this one, like Screen Toaster, it uses like the flashes. I can see it detecting my audio and I can select that, or I can select no audio. You can make the recording private so it's not public, like that, for certain things.
Definitely.
Tweet it. You can tweet it out on this as well and email it or share it through like a private link.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot like Screener. Screen Jelly and Screener are pretty similar, but they do the same thing and just kind of whichever one you want.
Yep.
You noticed what you thought was a slowdown with Screen Jelly, and you think it's because of the...
So I'm on a HP Mini, so it's not, you know, the fastest computer in the world. And, you know, and it's not just Screen Jelly. I noticed with this with a lot of sites is a lot of times if you have like a JavaScript overlay or, you know, just a ton of JavaScript on a page, it can make the scrolling just incredibly slow.
Yeah.
And what I'm pretty sure what it is, because this is the, and I've seen this even on a faster computer, is the JavaScript overlay for the, I think it's Get Satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see.
That's actually not, I don't think they're using a particular product on that actually.
Oh, okay. Maybe it just,
but just like that sort of little tab on the side that's like feedback or tell us or ask us. Yeah.
Yep.
So that makes sense.
So I don't know. It's a pet peeve of mine where a page scrolls slow, but I think it's partly the browser, partly the low resources, partly the JavaScript. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Not a deal breaker for sure.
It's especially when you're on a slower computer, it's kind of like you kind of have to assume you're going to make some sacrifices.
Yeah, like, but if I was going to do a screen recording and, you know, I don't know, I was going to use the browser, another tab or something, I don't know. Yeah, no, it's definitely not a deal breaker.
So here, this is funny. Screen Jelly and Screener are almost direct comparisons, except for they offer opposite things. Screen Jelly will do only full screen.
Oh.
Okay, and it allows you to have private recordings, which Screener does not.
Okay.
Now... so with Screener though, you can record only a chunk of your screen, but they can both tweet or share, you know, with a link form. But that's sort of the main difference. Screen Jelly will do full screen, and Screener will not.
Hmm.
So either or, whatever you like. But it's great to see this technology come about. I mean, you and I have been talking about screencast for a little while, and it seems like the technology had kind of, I didn't know that these existed at all until we were playing around with it today.
And they're both using like extensionless URLs, like, you know, the routes, like been talking about in the other,
like, short URLs kind of,
we've been talking about in the other podcast, like the, it doesn't have a .php or whatever. So yeah.
So check them out. I feel like I need to do some screencasts now. It's cool that they'll both take they'll all take like your microphone though, so you can talk and do it, you know. Well, we talked about this because you were doing screencasts for NixTutor.
This is interesting. There's only a limited time you can record, only 3 minutes on Screen Jelly.
Yeah, and Screener, it doesn't say a limit. I can't find a limit, but there has to be one, right?
I don't know. I know Screen Toaster. I've seen a recording that was longer than 3 minutes. So. I don't know. There's might be 5 minutes, 10 minutes.
Huh. Interesting. I don't know, but check them out. Do some screencasts. I like screencasts. I don't make them. I should. All right. So I want to remind you guys, if you have some news, follow-ups, or a web app that you want us to check out or a topic that you want us to cover, let us know. Go to faceoffshow.com/feedback, and we'll try and get it on the show as fast as possible.
All right. So our first topic, you know, every couple of episodes, we try to do kind of a web do and don't. And so we're going to do one of those real quick.
Yeah, we go to webdosanddonts.com. This is a really good website because it's got just kind of like little topics that we can go over. And we kind of go over the newest ones every couple weeks or whatnot. So what's the first one, Mark?
Avoid issues on handling Git element by ID. I guess there's a browser compatibility issue with IE6, and IE7. It's no surprise. If you just use the Git element by ID, I guess there's a problem with sometimes it doesn't select it. So you need to use kind of a combination between the name and the ID. I don't know. I think if you use kind of a JavaScript framework, it kind of does all the stuff for you. But if you're going to do the JavaScript by hand, be aware of that.
Yeah. Cool. The next do, let's do all the do's and then we'll do all the don'ts. Usually we alternate and I think it's kind of confusing. So let's do all the do's.
Okay. The next one is use negative CSS margins. I've used them. Sometimes you want to break out of the whole, this is my little box. Yeah. This is my little area of, and have I had like a little Twitter bird outside of the box a little bit, mm-hmm. flying above the box. And I use CSS negative margins to do that. So you can do some neat things with it. But it can break stuff.
I don't like it. I think it's like breaking the rule almost. I've used it before. I agree. You need to use it sometimes. But I feel like I'm being dirty about it. I would think that instead of using negative margins, you should just use relative positioning, mm-hmm. which if you did like rel and then did like negative, that makes sense because it's here. And relative to that, you want it to be -3 and -4 up, mm-hmm. instead of doing it in the margins, because I think that no thing should have negative margins. It doesn't make sense that it should.
That's, yeah.
But
there are, yeah.
But you have to use them sometimes. I would say use negative, like relative or absolute positioning instead.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The next one is use CSS shorthand. It can save some time. Instead of having like margin top, margin bottom, margin left, margin right, you can just use the margin tag and have the shorthand.
Yeah.
It saves a little bit of bandwidth because it's a little bit smaller. It's easier to type. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people don't use them just because they don't know. Well, does it start on the top and then go to the right and then to the bottom? Well,
that's exactly why I don't use them. I don't have these memorized and I should. I always forget. The only one I do know is border.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, border 1 pixel solid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's it. That's the only one I know. But like the other ones, I'm like, does it go clockwise starting with the top left? Or?
Yeah. I mean, it's good for optimization to have a little bit smaller CSS file size. If another programmer is looking at your work, you don't want to have like all these margin calls and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's not a big deal, but
it's a good thing to know, It's because you'll
make up a mnemonic or something,
yeah,
to figure, to remind yourself which one goes or a clock counterclockwise, yeah, or whatever it is.
If someone has like a little saying or something, let us know because I need to remember these as well. The next one is do learn to optimize JPEGs.
Yeah, it seems, we talk about optimizing images so much. I think we need to, dedicate a topic and show some of the apps that we use to do some of the image compression. Mm-hmm. Above and beyond, what Photoshop and some of the other web or the image editing programs do. Learn to optimize it. And this is really going to come in handy when your site's getting lots of traffic and you're minimized on, mm-hmm. or you have a limited amount of bandwidth.
Yeah, I mean, there are more advanced ways to compress an image than just sort of the default JPEG compression. Mm-hmm. There are ways to sort of losslessly compress an image, mm-hmm. And have the same as a smile of... have the same file size, mm-hmm. As a, just a generically compressed image,
right?
With lossless, no loss of quality at all.
And it might not make sense to go through your entire site and change every single JPEG, but like if you have a logo or some kind of a navigation type image that's going to be used everywhere,
template images,
you
and stuff,
might want to optimize those. Yeah. Because they're going to be used a lot.
And when we discuss this topic, because we've been kind of brewing, this topic's been kind of brewing in the back of our heads for a while. We'll show you some really cool like Linux command line tools to do it in batch processes.
And so even some cool web apps.
Yeah. So you can just, make it, do it really easy because it can be a pain.
Yep.
I'm lazy, so I'm not as into it as you are, but mm-hmm. you are really good about it. You tend to compress your images really well.
Yeah. It's one of those things that you need to make it really easy. Maybe, I have a script that all you have to do is drag in all the different images into one folder and it automatically will do them all. And then, maybe something like that.
Why can't Photoshop do this? Why isn't Photoshop doing this?
That's a good question.
Is it just they don't need to because everyone uses it anyway?
Maybe some of the optimization techniques are not very well known when they made that version. I'm not sure.
I don't know
why they don't. Because, I mean, what we're talking about is lossless. Above and so you have an image and then you want to further compress it without losing any more quality than you already have. Because obviously if you, I mean, you can get it down really small if you start losing a bunch of quality.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think most people know this in terms of audio, right? There's your wave, your completely uncompressed, mm-hmm. huge audio, mm-hmm. and it's lossless. There's no loss to it. And there's MP3s. MP3s are compressed. The file size is smaller, but the way it compresses is by removing things that you can hear. Then there's also lossless audio codecs, where the whole point is it's compressed. The file size is smaller than wave, but you technically don't lose any audio quality.
Right. Yeah, MP3, you actually lose a lot of data, but it's sounds or spectrum, like places in the sound where you can't notice it anyway.
Yeah, basically it starts cutting off the really low and really high bands the more you compress it. So that, you know, like what you can tell when a really song is really compressed bad, you can hear it in the cymbals. Like when they hit the cymbals, they just sound muted, kind of like psst, psst, psst.
I see.
Because you don't hear that really high reverberations from it.
The next one is do proofread.
Proofweed.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to have some goofy spelling mistakes and things like that.
Yeah. I'm a terrible proofreader, so I always have someone else proofread for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not good at
There are some people out there, like, if you have some goofy grammar mistake, they're just so turned off. It's like us going to a site that doesn't work in Firefox, but it only works in IE or something. It's like, oh my God, I got to get out of here.
Yeah, exactly. You used this improper etiquette. I hate you. So, make sure, you know, and if you have to have someone else proofread it, because see, my problem is whatever I write, even if it is grammatically incorrect, sounds right in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And if I proofread it, it still sounds right in my head. It doesn't, you know, even if there's like a typing mistake, my head corrects it when I'm proofreading it. Mm-hmm. So I usually have someone else do it for me.
I had some experience with this on a NixTutor article. I had worked, you know, late at night, and it was a quick article that I just banged out, and I didn't proofread it at all. And I had so many mistakes in it, and I was getting a lot of crap for it. So
good.
Good.
Clean your content up, Sanborn.
I went back and cleaned it up.
All right. So that's the do's. Let's hit the don'ts. The first one is don't put block elements inside inline elements.
Yeah, this is just, it's like kind of like the negative margins, I guess. They're not meant to be in there, and so don't put them in there.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost supposed to be the inline is inside a block element,
mm-hmm.
right? It just, it's like a, what do you call it, just a standard almost in thought.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that means. That's
but I
terrible.
Guess enough people do it that they have to put a don't, so.
Yeah, yeah, it's just because what happens is when you start doing this stuff, especially if you're really not experienced at it,
whatever works, exactly.
You're just like, man, I just am so tired of screwing around with this. I want it to work. And so you start doing things that you may not fully understand because you do a search on the internet and you're like, oh, if I put a span here, all of a sudden it works. Well, that it may work, but it's not right.
Yep. You might have problems later on down the road.
Yeah, exactly.
Adding a little bit more content.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, especially if you're doing like in your template, you're like, God, I want my template to work. And then find like, oh, it works. Yes. And then
you look at it like in another browser and it's just awful.
Yeah.
Or something. I don't
so
know.
Check yourself. I would not do that.
The next one is don't forget keyboard navigation. Sometimes, you know, you'll make a form and the tab, you know, goes back up to the top or something. And it's something you don't really, maybe you're not a keyboard guy. Maybe you're a mouse guy and you don't kind of check that. There are people that, you know, are keyboard sensitive. Mm-hmm. They want to have their shortcuts a certain way. And
absolutely.
They're used to hitting tab, tab, tab. And
I'm very much that way, actually.
Yeah.
Facebook comments, for some reason, when you type the comment and I hit tab space to submit it, always goes to some random link on the webpage because its tab order is off and it drives me nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, you gotta check out that stuff. It because if you're a keyboard person, this is so like by default, and explain this to me, Mac OS X has it so that it only tabs through text boxes by default in the operating system. So when you're filling out a form,
it can't do checkboxes?
It can't do checkboxes. It doesn't do dropdowns. It doesn't do anything. So you're filling out a form in Safari or Firefox. You go name, you hit tab, you know, you do your last name, and then you go tab to hit a checkbox, and it goes to the next text box.
That is terrible.
Stupid. Why would they do that? don't. It's in the keyboard settings of OS X. If you're running OS X right now, go into your keyboard settings and get rid of that. Because
you can change it?
Yeah.
Well, that's good. At least you can change it.
Well, yeah, but why is it that way by default? That makes no logical sense whatsoever. Oh, it's just such a mouse-heavy operating system that...
Well, you know, yeah, exactly that. And maybe Mac... Maybe they're saying, you know, Mac users are not typically going to think that they can hit, like, the space bar to check.
Yeah.
I remember actually the first time I didn't know that you could do the space bar check thing. It was, you know, it's been a while now, but I, you know, that's not.
Totally you were a noob.
Well, that was like in 2000 or something. But yeah, like, you know, it's not totally obvious that you could check something with the keyboard.
Yeah.
For some people.
So don't forget the keyboard users, because I am one of them. So definitely remember those people. The next don't is fix, or is don't fix, prevent. The best way to deal with CSS problems is not to fix them, but to prevent them. Adjust your coding style to write more efficient code. That's just a good tip in general, I guess. Yeah, if you know, try and think of the problems that you're going to have ahead of time and write in a way that, you know, prevents them from happening in the first place instead of just assuming that they'll pop up and you can fix them later.
The next one is don't resize the browser window. Oh, man.
Do not do this. Don't. If you do, I will hunt you down.
Almost all the browsers nowadays are tab-based.
Yeah.
And if you resize the window, it resizes the window, the entire Firefox session.
Just don't. That's something you should not screw with. That's what my operating system does. My operating system maximizes and sizes my browser. You should stay the heck away from it.
It's really annoying. So...
The next don't is don't allow hotlinking. This is a good tip. You've ran into some sort of content thieving sort of things in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Most of my pictures aren't, you know, content that someone would thieve anyways, because they're usually like Creative Commons stuff. But if someone else is stealing your bandwidth, why? Don't let them do that.
Yeah, and half the time it's, you know, they're stealing images that's on your site and like reproducing your article or something. Yeah, anyways.
Like, that's what you ran into. I mean, yeah. People were reproducing NixTutor articles just saying that they're theirs.
It's your bandwidth and your, you know,
left the images still linked to NixTutor.com.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
If you're allowing hotlinking, what are they doing with your images? Are they, you know, are they writing a blog post using your bandwidth, or are they copying your article? Or are they?
Well, I know back in the day we used to browse forums, and a forum would find an image and think it was funny or something like that, and then they just would use that same image from the same source over and over again, because there wasn't an image uploader for the forum. And it would, like, bring down people's websites because they didn't know. They just had this little image in their blog post, and then a big forum, like, at the time, I was at General Mayhem, would go crazy, and all of a sudden, they'd be over their bandwidth cap, and the next day, their site would be down, and they really got no traffic at all. I mean, it wasn't, their site was down because they were over bandwidth, but no eyes were actually on their website looking at their content.
Anything out of it.
So you might as well just prevent it and stop it from happening in the first place.
Are there any cases where you'd want to have it? If you're like a photography site or something.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a photographer and you have like watermarks inside your images, you might allow hotlinking. But that's about all I can really think of. For the most part, you don't really want people stealing your images. Unless if it's just like a normal image, like, you know, that there's really no reason that people would be reposting it anywhere. Like, you know, the Face-Off logo. I'm going to allow hotlinking on that. If people want to link to the Face-Off logo, I'm willing to provide the bandwidth for that so they can use it, you know? That's okay. But, like, if I was doing, you know, my own photography and stuff like that, I probably wouldn't allow hotlinking. Well, no, I just said I would. Yeah, I would, because I would watermark it. I'm not sure. Can our listeners think of any good use cases for when you would want to allow hotlinking? I don't know. I'm not sure if it's... I don't know.
I guess the reason I ask is because this particular don't did not have a very decent rating on this site. A lot of people, some people may have disagreed with it. So I'm wondering, it makes sense to me. Like if I have a blog and I'm writing mainly articles, those images, I don't want other people using them for mine. They can go, you know, if I'm using Flickr to find the images, or if I made the images or their own, my own screenshots and things, I don't really need them linking off of it and using my bandwidth.
Yeah, that's true. But at the same time, that's a good point. I can't see any reason why someone shouldn't just save it and then re-upload it if they really, really want it.
Yeah.
You know? Because, like...
If they write an article about NixTutor or something, and then all of a sudden I change my logo, then they still have this, you know, or change the name to the logo and it breaks on their site. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't look good for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They should just re-download it themselves. I agree. No good case. I wonder. I wish there was comments on here because I'm curious why other people are so opposed to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it makes me wonder.
Well, if you guys, as our listeners, if you have any reasons why you would not allow hotlinking.
Why you would allow hotlinking. Why specifically you want to allow hotlinking that we're missing. Let us know.
Yep.
All right. So the next topic that we want to talk about is from Simon Whatley's blog, and it's called The 10 Commandments of Social Media.
The 10 Commandments.
The first commandment of social media is thou shalt blog like crazy.
Yes, blogging definitely helps with the keyword and SEO, and it gives some personalization behind what your company stands for, or, you know, what you as a freelancer stands for. Blogging is great.
Yeah, I mean, blogging is sort of the key content of the internet right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a word that was sort of messed up when it first kind of popped out because it was associated with
A diary,
exactly. But, really, any sort of news article, press release and stuff is a blog.
It's like self-PR.
Yeah, exactly. So, and like we've talked about this, really the key to almost any sort of content creation is to keep at it. You've got to keep going. So a blog is a good way to keep it cranking out so that everyone can see it and get, like you said, SEO, a lot of it is how long you've been out there, who's been out there the longest.
Yeah, and if you got a ton of articles, you have every article you write, you have that many more keywords that people can find you through. And it's free press release. Like if Google, you know, Google's got a huge following on their blog, and if they want to release some new, like we have a new app or a new policy or something, they can do that. And that day, the entire internet now knows about it.
Exactly.
Without having to go to the papers or something.
Commandment 2, thou shalt create profiles everywhere.
Yeah. You know, Google, Twitter, you should have a Twitter account, a Facebook account, LinkedIn.
Yeah, I mean, I would say don't overstretch yourself, though, because if you're not going to use it, why do it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many companies out there, we've seen this because we tweet out companies when we talk about them in the show, and there's been a lot where I search for them, and I'm like, oh, great, they have a Twitter account, and there's two tweets that are a year and a half old. And you're like, well.
That's true. You know? They can kind of go stale.
Yeah,
and if you've got too many of them, you might have let's say you change your phone number and you forget that you had some Twitter profile up, and now you know you got a raw stale information.
Yeah, I agree. I fully agree with this. There are some places, we don't have a Facebook page for Face Off because I feel that's kind of overstretching it. I'd rather interact through Twitter. I'd rather get full interaction through Twitter than trying to, you know, half interact with both Twitter and Facebook at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Now, they did in the article, they had a link here to Open Social, and I checked that out. And it's a Google Summer Code project, and it allows you to, it's one API for all the different social things. So you could update like your information on all of them at once. So
that's great. Might be a way to, 'cause there's a couple popular places right now that are sort of what would you call them? Like the de facto standard, just because they're what people are using.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be nice if there was just one that, you know, like a service that other companies would start pulling from. So that, like you said, we don't have to do it in 5 different places all the time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Number 3, thou shalt upload photos, lots of them. Why not? I've kind of gotten into this. For a while there, I had a Samsung Omnia mobile phone, which had like a 5-megapixel camera. It was an awesome, awesome camera. I was uploading pictures to Twitter and Facebook all the time. And I thought it was really fun. I think it's great to just take a snapshot. And now I've downgraded to my old phone with a crappy camera. I don't do it at all anymore. And I miss it a lot because I really like posting pictures.
Yeah. And there's great apps out there for that. There's Flickr and Picasa.
If you want, you know, get a really nice camera and take pictures, or like what I was doing, just a camera with a good enough, or a phone with a good enough camera,
yep,
take pictures a lot. It's fun. I mean, there's a lot of, you'd be surprised. There's a lot of people that don't, but there's also a lot of people that want to get really close to companies or people right. on the internet, you know, and if, that really helps. Like just posting like, hey, here's me working. Here's someone who made a funny face at the office or something. That's like, you know, it gets them closer to being right. part of your company.
And I think that's what the social media is all about, is personalizing it.
So. Exactly. Close that gap so that people can feel like they're really interacting with your company. Commandment 4, thou shalt upload videos all you can find.
I mean, if you got demos and screenshots, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, if you look at Gary Vaynerchuk, he basically, you know,
he tweets video. I mean, he basically creates videos that are like tweets.
Yeah.
You know, really small, bite-sized videos. I watch each one. That's a great point,
his
maybe.
His entire business is based off his little videos that he does. Yeah. So
do that too. Yeah, I agree. I would say that pictures, I would say, are more important. But just because usually, so someone like
video's
me.
Video's tough.
I get really shaky about video. That's why we don't do video for this show, is because I think the cost of getting into video is very high, both expertise, equipment, to do it right, because I'm kind of OCD about that stuff. Like, I don't want to do it bad. You know, you and I, we've got like pretty good microphones right off, because it's like, I don't want to put out junky video or junky audio. And so I'm kind of afraid to do the video jump just because I don't know it. First of all, I don't know any of the technology. And second of all, it's expensive, both time and equipment. But these little video cameras, like the Flip videos and stuff, or now the iPod, the iPhone 3GS has a really nice video camera in it. You can do these sort of little snippet videos, and why not? That's a good point. It's a good point. We need to change, Mark Sanborn.
Let's change. Let's make a change.
Commandment 5, thou shalt podcast often.
I like this commandment.
Boy, I agree. Podcasting is good. Again, it just depends on who you are in the company, though. I mean, some of these are great. I don't think these are commandments. I'm not really jiving with this article 100% because we are a podcast. And if you're a big company, yeah, maybe podcast. But, you know, I wouldn't say that like a little company that's trying to get into social media needs to do all these things right off.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah. Like, you know, Stack Overflow. I mean, they're not a podcast, but they have a podcast, and it adds more to their site and their brand. And
yeah, it's fun, and it's like one of those things. Is people that really like podcasts really connect to companies using podcasts.
It's funny that you said, you know, like if you're not into the video, it says like if you can't get a good camera and all this stuff, do podcasts instead of the video in this article. So it's kind of funny.
Yeah. Well, someday.
It's true though. Audio is much easier than video.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're sitting here recording right now in t-shirts and pants. And, you know, if we were doing video, we'd have to look nice and do our hair and stuff. And that's just
get lights and stuff. Get
lights, look good. I can't just look good. It doesn't just happen. Oh, goodness. Commandment 6, thou shalt set alerts immediately.
This one, great definitely tip. Like, the Google alerts, Twitter search. I have all those set up, and
you need to know when people are talking about your company and your field of study. Even if it seems like overflow at first, you know, you don't have to read everything. No, I would say if Twitter, if they talk about your company, if someone talks about Face Off, I want to know about that. I want to hear that. But let's say, you know, web technology in general, I can't read every bit of news on web technology, but I have a lot of it so that whenever I get a chance and I feel like I can, I just kind of dig into it and read some stuff and get going. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You need to know what people are saying about you and the business that you're in. Commandment 7, thou shalt comment on multiple blogs. Again, this is a great tip. It just gets your word out there, and it shows people that you're creating good content and you know your stuff. So then when they see that you're commenting a lot on this blog they read, they're going to go check out what you're doing.
Yeah, and it shows your, like, if you're a company and you find somebody wrote a bad article about you and you come in and comment on it, respond to it, you know, that shows you, you know, that you're a hip company that's willing to make changes and, you know, and blog. You know, a lot of companies aren't, you know, there yet. Yeah. And so, yeah, it makes you.
And you're not just going to sit there and take it on the chin. I mean, if someone's saying something that's false, or even if they're pointing out a valid concern about your product or company, you can get on there and say, you know, hey, we tried to do this. We thought it was just a little too complicated for us right now. It's in the pipe, but we just can't do it right now, and we're sorry.
Yep.
You know, and that really speaks, like we said, the whole point of social media is to close that gap between the consumer and the company. And that's a way of doing it, is to go out and respond to these things and let people know that you're listening and that it's their complaints and thoughts are not falling on deaf ears. Mm-hmm. Commandment 8, thou shalt get connected with everyone.
Go around, get on Facebook, get on LinkedIn, you know, find other bloggers in your niche and connect with them, respond to them, maybe exchange articles or exchange ideas.
We try and do that with Twitter as much.
Go to conferences maybe.
Yeah. Which actually Face Off Show is going to CES this year, we found out.
Nice.
That's exciting, huh? It's my first conference. I've never been to a real conference yet.
Yeah, I haven't
either. So this will be exciting. So we're going to announce the details later. I don't know if we're going to try and record a show on the road or what. I mean, what would you let our listeners, if you have any ideas of what you'd like us to do when we go to CES, let us know. Because the details aren't hashed out yet.
January.
Yeah. But we decided that we got to start getting out of Montana. Start roaming the world. Commandment 9. Thou shalt explore social media 30 minutes per week.
Yeah, I mean, be the first to find the new social media stuff. Like, there's new ones popping up all over. Twitter was new at one point.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Friend feed. You know, it's not all about Twitter. There's a bunch of social media apps out there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, get into
explore.
It. Find it. Yeah, because like you said, I think that's a great example. Twitter was nothing at one point. It was just a goofy little website. And some people had the foresight to say, hey, we need to pay attention to this stuff because it's going to blow up someday.
And it did.
Yeah, look what happened. Commandment 10, thou shalt be creative. Go forth and create creatively. Yeah, I mean, get out there and explore. I mean, it is... The whole point is, and sometimes I get frustrated at this where I'm at, because while where I work, they really allow us to be creative and sort of explore. Just universities and government entities in general don't let you go as much as I would like to. And then sometimes I really wish I owned my own business because I want to try and do some crazy far out stuff that just would never, ever fly at a state university.
This is how things like Twitter get born. I mean, if you would have said, you know, what's Twitter back, you know, 3 years ago, you'd have been, well, that's a dumb idea.
Yeah.
But it's the creative ideas like that that really make changes.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it was a hubbub when we implemented a blogging system for the university. I mean, people just didn't get it. They freaked out. And that drives me nuts because I really want to, I think, you know, you might as well try these things. I mean, we played like with Montana Fragfest, I played around with building our own sort of Twitter Laconica clone and things like that. And you know, it flopped. No one did it. I decided not to do it, but it's that sort of creative energy that, you know, once in a while you might hit a big with something like that and it'll put your company way out there. So that was the 10 commandments of social media. I want to thank the divine voice for joining us on the 10 commandments. I don't know who that was, but it sounds great. Let's get on to our next topic. The next topic that we want to talk about is 6 simple ways for freelancers to increase productivity. We talk about freelancers a lot because, like, I subscribe to a lot of freelancer blogs and stuff. But I think freelancer is basically just another term for a small business owner, maybe with one guy or two guys.
Yeah.
So I like to read a lot of freelance stuff. And even though it may sound like that we're trying to talk about like freelance designers and stuff like that, this sort of encompasses any really small business. So the first one is to set a schedule. I can agree this is absolutely essential. The problem is when you're working from home or working by yourself is that you'll just kind of get wrapped up in it. And, you know, the sort of joke is when you start working at home, you start working in your underwear and things like that. And we've talked about this in the past, like putting on professional clothes will really step you up. Well, same thing. Just like if you work at another job, set a schedule and you'll just feel a lot more professional. You'll feel structured and ready to go.
Even if you don't have a business or you're actually a freelancer, but you have like your own personal projects, actually set a little bit of a time during the week to work on those, whether it be an hour a week or more, and you'll be a little bit more organized.
Yeah, and specifically with this, define your working hours and take breaks. You have to define your working hours, because this is the problem I found out when I worked at home when I was 19 or 20, and I had a really hard time with it. I was really immature, and basically I had a hard time stepping away from work time and having home relaxed time. Mm-hmm. I was constantly stressed about work, just all the time. It didn't work for me at all. So if I had been better at this, I would have defined my working hours mentally and physically and said, okay, after 5 o'clock, I'm not working on work. I have to spend time with my family.
Yep.
And take a break. I'm really bad about this at work sometimes. I have a couple friends who go out every couple minutes, and if without them, I would get in trouble, because sometimes I'll sit for 2 or 3 hours in the zone programming, and all of a sudden I have to like stand up, and I can feel it in my legs, you know. Yeah. It just hurts. Just get up and take a break, go, you know, stretch the eyes, especially if you're working on a computer. You know, if your eyes are focused at one focal length for a long time, that's really bad to your eyes. You need to walk up and look around and stuff and let your eyes kind of, you know.
Yeah. And like, you know, like take a lunch break. I'm bad at this too. Like I'll, you know, if I'm working on a really serious problem that I'm the type of guy that's got, if I have a problem, I have to like figure out, I'll work on it until I get it. You know, if I know there's some light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll forget to like take lunch or something, but then three quarters through the day. And if I don't take lunch, I'm like, oh, I'm so like, hungry.
What is wrong?
I gotta go.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. I think,
and
if you
get up from your desk, don't always take a working lunch. Get up and, you know, go sit outside and eat your lunch outside or something.
Yeah.
Number two is make a plan. We talk about this. You have to make a plan. You can't just do everything on the fly. And this, especially with your business, you know,
you'll just goals. Go in circles if you do that.
Yeah, exactly. Set goals. You don't know if you've achieved your goals unless you've set them.
Yep.
Otherwise, you'll feel like you're just kind of like a hamster in a wheel all the time.
Sure. Create to-do lists. I got to do this and that. Maybe get into GTD or something.
Yeah.
Break up the larger tasks into more manageable pieces.
Yeah. You talk about this with project management all the time in general. You have to, set a limit. Like, if these tasks are going to take longer than this many hours, then I need to break it up further so that I can get a better handle on how long this project is going to take me to do.
And sometimes, if you have this huge project, you're like, oh, I don't know what's the next thing to do. So you just kind of put it off. What is the absolutely next step? Even if you don't, if you're not sure what to do, then maybe that next step is to figure out what the next step is.
Yeah.
You got to sit down there and figure that out.
Yeah. Schedule some time, take a block and put it down there. The next one is track your time. You have to track your time, especially if you're in a freelance business, because even if you are doing bids, you need to know how much time that would take you and kind of set like, okay, well, if I did this hourly, my hourly rate would be this. This is the profit I'm getting, because you need to know how long it takes you to do certain things. In your head, you can do anything in about an hour. Everything takes about an hour in your head, and that's not the case in real life.
Right.
So you need to have this record of what you're doing and how long it takes you.
And on that same note, evaluate your performance. If it's taking you like a really long time to do something that normally would take a short time, evaluate your performance.
Yeah. I mean, are you doing better than you thought? Are you doing worse than you thought? It was something that you thought would be easy, turned out to be a lot harder because you needed some more training or what, look at that.
The next kind of topic is get focused, do one task at a time.
It's really easy to feel like you just need to do everything now, go, go, go. But really, if you focus on one thing and crank it out, you'll usually do it a lot better than trying to do multiple things at once all the time.
Mm-hmm. Limit your time spending surfing the web. I definitely need to do more of this.
Yeah. I think it's better to set blocks. My problem, I used to be really good about it, is I would spend a certain time when I came in the morning, I would get a cup of coffee, I would catch up with my coworkers. And then we would do what we would call internetsing for about, a half hour, 45 minutes when we first got into the office, where we'd catch up on our email, RSS feeds. Not all emails work related, but it kind of, gave you that chunk of like saying, okay, I'm done. And then we would get back from lunch, and after lunch we'd spend, another good half hour or something like that browsing the internet, looking at things. It was better to sort of set chunk times like that, because then it just wasn't in the middle of the day. You weren't like, oh, I'll check out Facebook. Boop.
You just find yourself checking all the time, and then next thing you know it, all you're doing is surfing the web.
Yeah, exactly. The next one, eliminate distractions. This, obviously, try to, if you can, if you're working from home, make sure you have like an office where you can try and sort of shut the outside world out. Things like IM are a really big distraction. I've gotten a lot better about this in the past, year or so. I used to have this terrible thing where if someone messaged me, I had to like sit at the chat window and chat with them. And the problem was everyone else didn't do that. So like they would just chat with me and then go do some work for a little while and then come back and message. But not me. I'd be sitting there the whole time. You know, I felt like that I couldn't go back to work until this conversation was resolved.
Yeah, or flipping back and forth to the IM window and all that.
I've gotten a lot better about that, to shut it all off. I put in my headphones. You know, I put my IM on a whole nother workspace. This is the benefit of virtual desktops, like in Linux or with OS X with Spaces, is that you can put all your fun stuff on another one and all your work stuff on another one. So you kind of like slide over to your virtual desktop and say, okay, work mode.
Yep. And a lot of times, you know, like Twitter or email, you know, check it, maybe make like a block time. Like I'm going to check my email in the morning and then at the end of work, the last hour or something. And then don't check your email at all. Because going into your email and just the fact of checking it, that might waste maybe a minute or two. But if you're doing that every 5 minutes, you're wasting a lot of time.
Yeah, exactly. All right, the next big step is get organized.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to. It's just the problem is it'll snowball you. If you get a little disorganized, things, you know, will build up, and then you just keep, you know, staying a little bit disorganized until eventually you don't know where anything is, you can't find anything, and you're in trouble.
Consolidate your email. You know, if you've got multiple email addresses that you have to check periodically, like a work one and a personal one, you know, either do what you what do you do? You send all, you forward them all usually, or do you have like a client where you have all the different accounts? I kind of do a little bit of both.
I do a little bit of both. I think most of mine, I stopped forwarding just because I wanted to keep them a little bit more separate.
Mm-hmm.
But I do, with Gmail, I do pull in other Gmail accounts through Pop.
Okay.
But I lied. I stopped doing that as well. Now I just use a Firefox extension that checks all my Gmail accounts for me. So they're totally separate. I don't, you know, I'm not combining things, which can be good and bad. It'd be nice if I could search all of them at once, which I should. But I also, like, in my head, I like compartmentalizing things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's say if, for whatever reason, someday I wasn't a host of Face Off show, it'd be nice. You know, it's nice that it's all by itself. And
sure.
But that's what I use.
Next one, you know, use labels to organize your email. I do this. What I have is a next action waiting for.
Yep.
And then that's it, actually.
Yeah, I just have a waiting for a reply and action required.
Yep. And so that's a very a GTD type philosophy. But yeah, you basically, it almost always will fall in one of those categories. Mm-hmm. Like this is going to be something I need to make an action on. Like I got to reply to the person or.
Yeah. And that way, like someone like me, I use multiple inboxes, which is a Google Apps feature.
Yep.
And so I have my regular inbox and then I have the inbox with the waiting for reply label and then the inbox on the action needed label. And so this is great because I just go in my inbox and once I've read an email, I can either put it in action needed or waiting for reply or archive it and it keeps it empty. Whereas before my sort of method was kind of similar, I would just leave it in the inbox until my action needed was done. But this way I can separate just the ones I need to read or there is actually an action needed.
The next one is update all your social media accounts at once.
Ping.fm, man.
Yeah, or like to check it, social thing. We talked about that in one of the earlier social episodes.
Social thing, yeah. I cannot recommend social thing anymore, to be honest with you. they're working on some new products or something, so they've stopped maintenance on their current application.
Have they?
Yeah, and it's breaking all over the place. Like I changed my Twitter and Facebook passwords, and it will not remain connected to them anymore. And it's just they need to fix it or do something. I don't know. I'm kind of really upset about it because I thought that was a really great application. I loved it, and I felt like they got acquired and then abandoned it, and I just feel kind of left out in the cold.
Okay. Well, ping.fm then.
Ping.fm, friend feed is another good one you can do. It's not quite perfect, but yeah.
Set up your office properly. This is especially for like a freelancer that's working at home. You know, make a little space that's your like office.
Yeah, so like the first one is respect your office. And that's, yeah, this is where you work. This is your office. Respect it. Keep it clean. Keep it nice. It'll make you feel more professional and you'll do better work.
Yep. Make it comfortable, set up the ergonomics, the keyboard, have a nice chair, you know.
Yeah, open up the window, play some music. I love working at home now every other day or whatever because I can crank my own tunes to a comfortable volume. I don't have to wear headphones. I can get work done. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Go mobile, you know, Wi-Fi. You take your little laptop with you, go hit up Starbucks. Or
yeah, go sit at a coffee shop if you want. Go to the public library, you know, if you want someplace quiet, nice, or find a picnic table. Yeah, definitely.
Number six, get help. You know, freelancers oftentimes get really busy, especially if they're good. Sometimes you have to outsource, and you know, so a lot of times maybe a freelancer might say something like, you know, I got to do all these projects because it's my name's on the line, and
yeah, I mean, again, are a small business, and if it becomes to the point where you're wasting your time doing small office tasks because you just feel like you need to, then look at the time. If you're recording your time and you have figured out how much your time is worth, then it's really easy for you to say, okay, it's definitely worth it for me to hire someone at $10 an hour to do this when I'm wasting $50 an hour work that I'm charging to do it. There's a lot of great web apps. This is where like software as a service has come in really helpful for small business and freelancers. You can get full featured applications for really cheap monthly rates to do all kinds of cool stuff, less accounting for invoices, stuff like that. There's a ton out there. Well, that wraps it up for this episode of Face Off. We want to remind you guys that you can subscribe to the show by going to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. You can also leave feedback for the show by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. If you can, leave a review for us on iTunes. That really helps us out. And we'll see you guys next week. Thanks for listening.